and an interview with his mother for charges relating to an OPP invasion that took place on the land reclamation April 19th, 2006. But also today's a very sad show, as we'll be featuring interviews and poetry about a friend and comrade to many in independent media across North America, Brad Will, a member of the New York Independent Media Center, who was in Oaxaca, Mexico, on the front lines, at the barricades with the school teachers, striking to demand justice, since June of this year, was killed by paramilitaries of the Mexico state, along with three other people alongside him at that barricade. Myself and some other members of the CKUT Community News Collective were friends and colleagues with Brad Will. So tonight we pay tribute to Brad Will, an independent media journalist and activist, a singer for change, for social change. And we'll be featuring an interview with Jenka, also another member of the New York Independent Media Center, a longtime friend of Brad Will, and a reading by Anto, a member of the New York Independent Media Center, currently living in New York. And all of that today on Off the Hour, CKUT 90.3 FM, www.ckut.ca on the web. And welcome back to CKUT Off the Hour here Tuesday, October the 31st. And joined with us live on the phone is a member of La Otra campaign, the other campaign, a movement, a group here in Montreal in solidarity with the other campaign in Mexico, focusing on the struggles of indigenous people, but for social justice in Mexico, for all peoples, that began in response to the federal elections in Mexico this year. And joined with us on the phone is Carmen, a member of La Otra campaign in Montreal, who's currently in front of the Mexican consulate protesting the state of siege upon the state and people of Oaxaca. Thank you, Carmen, for coming on Off the Hour.
Yeah, hello.
Can you tell us maybe why there has been this emergency mobilization that's been taking place here in Montreal in front of the Mexican consulate, but also around the world today and tomorrow as well?
Yes, we have information that several demonstrations went going on all the weekend, and also today and tomorrow in New York, in Milan, in Barcelona, in Madrid, Brussels, and many other places, and South America as well, in solidarity with the people of Oaxaca because of the repression they faced during the weekend. It's a repression that we were expecting, because we cannot expect another thing from the government of Oaxaca, from the governor Ulises Ruiz. But that's it. We're here to demonstrate in solidarity and to say that the people from Oaxaca are not alone, and that we know what's going on, and we are denouncing these events, these violent events against the people that are demonstrating peacefully for the demands that are just.
Can you talk about some of those demands that the people in Oaxaca have taken up, because it is clearly that it resonated with the majority of people in Oaxaca who are in support.
I can't hear very well because there's music here and everything. It's like a very festive demonstration, so if you could speak a little bit louder, because I cannot hear very well.
Well, maybe then I'll ask you, what is happening in Montreal currently in front of the Mexican consulate? And what is taking place over the course of the next day in Montreal in terms, in response to the events in Oaxaca?
We have a press conference tomorrow with two people from Oaxaca that are currently here in a caravan for solidarity around Quebec and Ontario. We have another event on Thursday. I'm going to give you the address. It's 4518 Généraux. And this is just one block north of Mont-Royal and Juan Papineau, the corner of Papineau. It's 4518. This is Thursday at 7 p.m. We're going to talk with these two people, these indigenous people from Oaxaca, that have first-hand information because their organization is part of the APO, the Assembly of the People of Oaxaca, that is resisting the government of Ulises Ruiz. So we will be there. We will also show the video that was taped by Brad Wheel, the guy from Indie Media New York that was shot by police that was dressed as civilians that are paid by Ulises Ruiz, the governor. So we're having that so far. Of course, we will have many other actions in solidarity with the people of Oaxaca. Let people know here in Montreal what's going on and that human rights are not being respected in Mexico as in other places. It's the same strategy that the government used in Atenco, the same strategy that the government tries to use every time that a social movement is mobilizing in Mexico. The only way they react is by repression. So we invite you there. There's another event at Concordia tomorrow at 7. I'm not sure about what classroom, but I know that there's another event at Concordia with Amnesty International. And so there's going to be a lot of events. You can check at the website of NEFAC, www.nefac.net, to have an update on the activities that we will be having during this week and the next week until the governor is destituted from his post at the Mexican government.
What are the events that have been taking place in Oaxaca over the past weekend? If you can talk about the repression that the people are facing in Oaxaca.
I'm sorry?
If you can talk about the repression that people are facing in Oaxaca currently over the since the weekend.
Yeah, there was a negotiation between there was a negotiation going on between the federal government and the Assembly of the People of Oaxaca, and there was an agreement that professors will go back to school on Monday, and the only demand that they had was that the governor should leave the office, the governor Ulises Ruiz should get out of Oaxaca. And they made an ultimatum for Friday. So on Friday, the government, the governor, Ulises Ruiz, started attacking the guys that are paid by Ulises Ruiz, started shooting at the barricade. There was four people killed, and one of them was a journalist. And this was the pretext for that used the Mexican President Vicente Fox to send in the federal police, the same police that was there at Atenco, the same police that occupied Atenco in May, and that, we know what happened in Atenco, all the beating and all the violations to the women that were arrested. So they sent the police on Saturday morning. And the people of Oaxaca knew that it was going to be like a massacre, so they decided that they will resist, but they will resist peacefully, and because they know, like, the federal police is no joke, and they are not, just there to occupy; they're there for to kill and to do whatever they have to do in order to follow orders. So. They resisted as long as they could. Now they moved to another place in Oaxaca, to the Plaza the Santo Domingo, which is not very far from the main square, from the Zócalo, where right now there's it's taken by the police, and they are trying to defend as well the university, because over there is there's the only radio that still inform what's going on in Oaxaca. So some people are in assemblies and in a planton, in a strike at Plaza de Santo Domingo, and the rest of the people are defending the radio university in Oaxaca.
And once again, just if you can let people know, because the outrage that is taking place and should take place, how long is the demonstration going to be going on for at the Mexican consulate in Montreal today? And if you could tell people where it is.
For the demonstration today?
Yes.
We are going to be here, I don't know how longer, until people are here, I guess. But we will be having many different activities all the week. We are also planning a very big demonstration on the 20th of November. There's an international call for all the people that are following the sixth declaration of the Lacandona Jungle, the people that are assembled in the other campaign that was started by the Zapatistas movement. And now many other social movements in Mexico and around the world have joined this struggle. So one of the things that we have very clear is that if they touch, if they beat one of us, they beat us all. So we're there for solidarity, because that's the only way that we will survive. So there's going to be here many other demonstrations. There's demonstrations going on all over the world, and you can see all this information in indie media, different indie media. In Mexico, there's the Centro de Medios Independientes, which is also transmitting the radio signal from Radio University in Oaxaca. And the people in Oaxaca are still in the streets. They are not afraid of the police, and they are starting to get organized again to keep on with the resistance, and they are not going back to their houses until the governor is out of Oaxaca.
Thank you very much, Carmen. And for Carmen had said, for more information about the events taking place in Montreal in solidarity with the people of Oaxaca, you can go to www.nefac.net.
Okay, thanks to you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
This is Mustafa Hanoi from CKUT's Off the Hour. And today I'm with Jenka Soderberg, an independent media activist who was involved with New York Independent Media Center and who's currently in Palestine as an indie media activist and a beloved friend of Brad Will, recently killed in Oaxaca, Mexico. Reporting as an independent media activist, Brad was someone who was involved in many social justice struggles in the U.S. but also around the world. And we're here today with Jenka, a beloved friend of Brad Will, and here to speak about Brad and about what's happening in Oaxaca. Thank you, Jenka.
All right, no problem.
The first question I want to ask is, to many people, unfortunately, what the current events in Oaxaca were not making the mainstream news, and only left to those of us within independent media to bring the issues out into the public about the events that are taking place in Oaxaca. And Brad was one of those journalists. If you can talk about who Brad was and the reporting that he did as an independent media activist.
Sure. Well, as an independent media center activist, and the beginning, of course, of the independent media center was in the Seattle protests of 1999. Brad and myself and many other people committed ourselves to that vision of giving a voice to the voiceless. And this is a different kind of media than what the corporate media is, which is basically, you know, you get what you pay for. And the corporations control the content of the media based on their stockholders and of course, their corporate holdings. Our vision of media is actually media as social justice. In that sense, we are connected with the movements that we report on. We don't believe that there's anything like objective journalism. You're either going to report on injustice and challenge that injustice, or you're going to be a part of that injustice. And Brad was showing that just as much as anybody could in Oaxaca. And, of course, right now, his death is being used as part of an excuse by the Mexican government to go in with massive military force into Oaxaca to put down the protest, the very protest that Brad was working in solidarity with, and putting his camera out there and his body on the line in order to bring the reality of the people's struggle in Oaxaca to the world. And now to use his death as an excuse to bring in federal troops, it goes against everything that any of us stand for, especially Brad.
Can you talk about your friendship with Brad and what the both of you had worked on and committed to together in terms of independent media and in terms of highlighting the injustices that take place not only in the U.S. but around the world, from Palestine to Oaxaca?
Sure. Now, when I met Brad, it was in the beginning of 2001. We were just at the forefront of the indie media movement, trying to get centers started up wherever we could for people to be able to be their own media. And the center in New York became a real hotbed of that kind of activity, of people bringing their stories out and promoting a vision of a better world through people to people reporting rather than through the lens of the corporate media. Now, when I got to know him, we were a whole bunch of us camped out at the Indie Media Center in New York. We slept there. We worked all day and night trying to get the word out. At that time, the major issue, of course, was the FTAA, the Free Trade Area of the Americas protests that were going on. And later in the year, September 11th happened, and we were out there reporting right from Union Square, which is quite near the Indie Media Center. Brad was always there with his camera, and if he didn't have his camera, he had his guitar. It was one or the other. You know, he was as much a musician as a cameraman, and also an activist. I think that part can't be left out, because it was more than media to him and to any of us. It was a search and a vision and a push for changing the world to make this world a better place, and it still is. And his death is just one of many people who have gone under the guns of the oppressors. And in this case, it's so clear exactly what happened to him, that he was assassinated by government-paid assassins who were in plain clothes in Oaxaca, Mexico. I don't know what I can say about his life and our time together. You know, as friends in New York, he was part of the great crew of New York indie media, and always just casual about everything that he was doing. He would go out on the front lines, but not act as if he was doing anything courageous. You know, just totally casual and relaxed, even if he was inside of the squat while the wrecking balls were hitting it, which is one of the, you know, the legendary stories of his life. It was in 96 when they demolished the squat with him inside of it down on East 5th Street in New York. And the community garden struggles, he was part of that. Of course, locking down to protect the community gardens in New York from the construction and the development that was going on by, of course, rich developers who wanted to get rid of the very aspects of community that hold neighborhoods together. So it wasn't just a global struggle, it was also a local struggle. And I think that's true for all of us, that it goes from the local level to the global very quickly. Because once you start uncovering the injustices around you, you start realizing that it's not just a singular event, that it's an entire structure, and it's a worldwide structure that's problematic. And when I first knew him, he was talking about going down to South America and to Central America, and he did, you know, soon after that, and I did as well, down to Chiapas. Mostly we were working with the Zapatista communities, the autonomous communities in Chiapas, Mexico, and of course in Oaxaca, the autonomous movement that started up this year with the teachers' strike is very much in line with the Zapatista philosophy, which is that people should govern themselves, that indigenous people who have been pushed down in the colonial history of Mexico need to be able to have a voice, need to be able to decide for themselves how they want to live, and to be left alone to do that without the multinational corporations coming in to take over their land, to put in cattle plantations, or to take their coffee from the indigenous villages, and for those people to be able to have self-determination, as is the right of every people on earth. And you know, Brad, as a person, I think embodied the indie media activist. You know, because you'd always see him with the video camera at any given protest, and he wouldn't miss one. You know, he'd always be out there with his camera, and not just filming, but putting that stuff out. Whether it was through Lenny Charles's independent news network, or through indie media websites, just any way possible to get that, to get those images out there for people to see. Because every time we show those images, it allows people to come closer to the truth and to realize what has to be done to make justice happen.
Unfortunately, it took, I mean, the situation in Oaxaca, unfortunately, had to take, go this far and to bring it to the mainstream, even a bit, the death of Brad Will. Why do you feel that the situation, particularly in Oaxaca, was not getting the coverage that it obviously deserved and needed due to the situation there was, people had been barricading Oaxaca since June of this year. Can you talk about, as an independent media activist, as well as someone who struggles for social justice, why do you feel that Oaxaca was not getting the attention that was needed and took independent media activists like Brad to go there to cover these struggles and these stories?
In the view of the corporate media apparatus, what's been happening in Oaxaca is not newsworthy. It doesn't fit their criteria of a newsworthy event. It doesn't have the kind of political import that would be required for a news story to be reported on the mainstream media. I mean, you can get a single sentence from one particular person, if they're a president or a prime minister, that gets all the press. But thousands and thousands of people rising up, standing up for their rights, being killed, being gunned down in the streets, that's not newsworthy according to the corporate media and their idea of how the power structure should be maintained and how the determination of what is newsworthy is made by the editors. So what we feel is newsworthy as people committed to social justice doesn't fit the same criteria as what the corporate media feels is newsworthy. I mean, you could have tens and hundreds of thousands of people in Bolivia and Cochabamba rising up for their right to have water, you know, without it being privatized by an American corporation. You think Americans hear about it? They don't, because it doesn't make the media. So what we have globally, not just in Central America, not just in Mexico, and not just in South America, but globally, is a movement of social justice, a people's revolution that's taking place that isn't making the media. Because it just doesn't hit those hot buttons that the corporate media requires for things to make the news. So what's happening in Oaxaca is something that also challenges the power structure. You've got one of the most corrupt governors, Ulysses Reyes, and he doesn't get pushed out of power, even when there's a referendum in July among the people of Oaxaca to challenge his power and vote him out of office. And instead, you've got a place where people have to buy their water rights from Coca-Cola. Well, the president of Mexico is the former president of the Coca-Cola Corporation. They've got these connections, and the poor people are the ones that suffer. And so they're the ones that are rising up. And that kind of thing doesn't make the news. When you have people standing up for their rights in the tens of thousands and the hundreds of thousands, and they're doing it nonviolently, doesn't make the news. That's what we're here for, and that's what Brad was there for, and that's why he died, because he was putting out the news that the corporate media doesn't want you to hear, that the corporate elite doesn't want you to hear, and that the corporate government doesn't want you to hear. And because we put out those stories, somehow we're a threat to them.
I just want to ask one last question. How do you feel Brad would want to be remembered and talked about? And also, what can people do to sort of not only just to find out more, but to act on what's been happening in Oaxaca?
Again, we wouldn't do justice to Brad's memory if we didn't stand up against this injustice. Right now, it's not getting better because he died. It's getting worse. It's like, you know, for some people who are older than I, they probably remember this event. I've read about it. But in the mid-80s, a young man named Ben Linder was killed in Nicaragua by the Contras that were American-supported. And he was there working on a water project with the Sandinistas, who were the democratically people-led movement that the United States-supported Contras violently put down. And his death became a point where the Contras began to become unpopular. The American government, which had been openly funding the Contras, had to secretly fund them and had to move away from that. It was a turning point in that struggle. Unfortunately, hundreds of thousands of people have died, and in that region. And that Sandinista movement never did make it back, although there are signs that it may be coming back in El Salvador and Nicaragua with some of the people's movement. But unfortunately, things don't change unless we stand up to change them. And so if people don't take this seriously and take this as a wake-up call to go out and to do something. In Indianapolis, a group of protesters stormed the Mexican consulate. In New York, they ripped off the gate of the Mexican consulate. And in other places, there have been big protests at the Mexican consulates, but there needs to be more. We need to challenge the people in positions of power in the United States and in Mexico to stop the repression of people's movements and to listen for once to what the people are saying, to take the footage of the independent media journalists and let people see it. I think a big part of the movement in Oaxaca has been the takeover by the people of the radio and television stations, which had been state-controlled in Oaxaca, and the people are able to put to bring their message to their fellow citizens. And that's why the movement has been so popular, because they've been able to retake their media. And that's what would bring justice to Brad's memory, is for us as a social movement to take back our media and to challenge those in power who would oppress people to the point of gunning them down and just repressing and oppressing a people's movement. We need to take that power back, and we can do it through independent media and through nonviolent resistance, as the people in Oaxaca have been showing us. We need to take their lead, and we need to challenge those who would keep us down.
Thank you very much, Janka, for coming on CKUT all the way from Palestine, another place, unfortunately, of occupation, of where independent media activists and solidarity activists have also been killed, deported, kept out from telling the truth. And where you're there just as strong as Brad was in Oaxaca to bring out that injustice and to make sure that the truth and also justice is put on the table and is actually challenging not only the power structures but corporate media. Thank you very much, Janka, not only for this interview but for the work that you do and as an independent media activist.
That's right. I mean, truth and justice go hand in hand. Thanks very much, Mustafa.
And welcome back to CKUT's Off the Hour, www.ckut.ca on the web, 90.3 on the dial. Time now is 5:40, and we were just listening to an interview that I had conducted yesterday with Janka Soderberg, dear friend and comrade of killed New York independent media journalist Brad Will, who was murdered over the past weekend in Oaxaca, Mexico, as a state of siege emerges. And Vicente Fox on national television addressed the public that he will deal with the issue, or what he quotes as the problem of Oaxaca. And it's clear what he meant by that, as thousands of federal police stormed into the city center with water cannons, tanks, amassing of force in Oaxaca, plane loads of soldiers and police entering into the state. And the response is clear by what we've aired today, by the street protests in Montreal, in New York, in Chicago, in Berlin, in Rome, that a solidarity movement is growing, as well as in Mexico, a general strike has been called for. But tomorrow, the Zapatistas, or the EZLN, Zapatista National Liberation Army, has called for highway shutdowns across Chiapas and as well as in other places within Mexico for the struggle for justice in the people's movement in Oaxaca, but also for all other social movements inside Mexico. And we'll be changing the focus for a bit now as we're airing an interview, a series of interviews done by Dimitri of the CKUT Community News Collective, about a growing controversy that's been taking place at FACE Alternative School. And this piece was conducted and produced by Dimitri of the CKUT Community News Collective.
FACE School on University Street has been a part of the Montreal community for over 30 years. Initiated in 1975 by Philippe Bonnier and Lydia Farabee at Victoria School, as an elementary program, it soon expanded and became both an elementary school and high school. And by 1979, it moved into the building of the High School of Montreal on University Street, just across from the campus of McGill University. It has since grown to over 1,500 students, going from kindergarten through grade 11. FACE stands for Fine Arts Core Education. And that's exactly what the curriculum of the school is. In addition to regular classes, students have theater, choir, musical instrument, and art classes integrated into their day. Unlike specialized schools, FACE is not geared towards creating artists per se. Thus, regular classes are as important as the school's arts curriculum. For example, a student may play the violin in the school's strings orchestra, but that same student will also have to do chemistry and physics class. The other innovation behind FACE is its bilingual nature. The school has a French sector and an English one, which is unique in Quebec. This is made possible under a special agreement between the Commission scolaire de Montréal and the English Montreal School Board. So why were hundreds of FACE students and parents present at CSDM offices last Wednesday, October 25th? Why did students gather in front of FACE School last Friday, October 27th? Why were these students concerned about their school?
We're doing this because the CSDM's trying to take over our school. Like, they don't understand the arts program, how it helps us, like, learn. And apparently, when kids that have gone to FACE get into CEGEP, they're better at CEGEP and university because they know how to speak for themselves, they know how to act for themselves. So we don't want our program to be ruined or our principal's reputation to be stained, so we're trying to stand up for that.
The students and parents were protesting the suspension of school principal Nick Primiano, FACE's principal since Philippe Bonnier's retirement in 1991. I met with Gabriel Gagnon, a grade 11 student who is in his ninth and final year at FACE, to ask him about the latest events at FACE.
There were major changes. There is no more confidence between the students and the new members of the administration, like there was before with Mr. Primiano. A good example of that is when they suspended him, they didn't even tell us. And we had to wait 3 days before someone opened his mouth.
Well, actually, who told you? Like, how did you find out about it?
I don't think that the person wants to know, wants to be revealed.
The CSDM, La Commission Scolaire de Montréal, has been extremely secretive since the Primiano suspension first took place on September 25th. As Gabriel said, students were not informed of the suspension, nor were the parents. Pat Schmidt and Kate Henderson are two mothers with children at FACE. They are also members of the SOS FACE committee, which was put together as a response to the Primiano suspension. They confirmed that they too were not in the loop. The CSDM did not feel it was appropriate to inform the parents of the principal's absence at the school.
My children came home from school, or didn't come home. I picked them up from school. I pick up my three and two children who I carpool. And on that Thursday afternoon of September 28th, they came running out of the school. My daughter was crying. The other children were all upset, and they said that Mr. Primiano had been fired and that there was going to be a rally at 7:30 the next morning. And they wanted me to stop so they could buy poster board on the way home and they could make banners. And they were very visibly and emotionally upset by the rumor they had heard. And that was my first indication that something was going on.
And our kids came out of school, same thing, and that night there was a lot of MSN chat, and they rallied everybody together, and it was like, we have to be there at 7:30, and we weren't even sure why. We knew it was something to do with Primiano, but we didn't know the story at all.
The CSDM has invoked the need of confidentiality in an ongoing investigation. The allegations against Mr. Primiano have not been made public. In the meantime, l'Association Montréalaise des Directeurs d'Établissements Scolaires has demanded the CSDM reinstate Primiano as principal. The professional organization, which represents principals in Montreal, believes there has been no proof of wrongdoing on the part of Primiano and has consequently threatened to sue the CSDM. The parents on the SOS FACE committee do not accept the board's justification for keeping the information confidential and are losing faith and the CSDM's handling of the affair.
The school board is using the reason that they were trying to protect Mr. Primiano's reputation by giving the explanation that he was taking a personal leave of absence. But in fact, the only time they did that was at 7:30 in the schoolyard to the group, the very surprised and immediate group of students and parents who had gathered that morning. And it only took the school board a matter of hours before they very quickly disclosed to the press that Mr. Primiano had actually been suspended with pay pending an investigation. So if they had truly wanted to protect his reputation, then that is what they would have told the press that same day.
Furthermore, the parents don't see the situation as simply an attack on Primiano, but as an attempt to conform face to the CSDM.
Well, I think, number one, the entire administration that's at face for their entire existence has always been brought up through the ranks, and so they're well aware of the school's mandate and how it's run. And to remove one of the parents in the larger meeting called it the captain of the ship. You can't take away the captain of the ship and expect the ship to run the way it did. Other people have compared it to a conductor of an orchestra. Yes, you have all the necessary pieces in place, but if you don't have someone at the top with some kind of a vision, everything crumbles underneath it very quickly. And in the corporate world, I mean, we hire and fire CEOs based on this. You know, you cannot say that one guy at the top and his removal isn't going to change everything. It is going to change things, and we're very aware of that.
And I believe that if the CSDM wanted us to truly understand that it was only an affair of l'affaire Primiano, then they would have very quickly managed to make it very clear to the FACE community what it was that they were supposing, what allegations there actually were. And they would not have pursued a manner that was secretive through the whole course of this affair, from the beginning of moving into the office without letting anybody know to changing their story a couple of versions within a day, to sending Madame Senecal, their representative, to the governing board meeting in order to not answer questions that parents had. That caused a lot of frustration, and it is from that meeting that our SOS FACE committee grew, because we were so frustrated with the lack of answers. If the CSDM wanted us to understand that our school was not at risk, they would have made us feel that they were doing everything in their power to maintain a sense of transparency and honesty in answering questions and in telling us what the details of their investigation were. And right up until this very moment, they kind of keep rolling over in their process of trying to keep things from being very clear, even in the process of their meeting on Wednesday night, whereby they did all they could do to intimidate the group of people who had collected at their offices to ask them questions, and again were met with a lack of answers and a lack of respect.
The meeting at CSDM last Wednesday, October 25th, drew hundreds of FACE supporters to the school board's offices on Sherbrooke Street East. Some of those people managed to get in, while others were refused entry due to safety concerns. Inside, Board President Diane de Courcy made clear the board's position. FACE School is not under threat, and Primiano is under investigation, and a decision would be made public on November 1st. She then proceeded to allow the parents, students, and alumni of FACE to ask her questions, which she consistently refused to answer, always alluding to the forthcoming meeting on November 1st.
Je ne répondrai pas à chacune des interventions, à chacune des questions. Comme je vous l'ai dit au départ, la déclaration que j'ai faite me semble, d'ailleurs, suite à votre question, répondre en partie à un certain nombre de questionnements. Mais je n'irai pas plus loin dans le cadre de cette assemblée de ce soir, au-delà de cette déclaration. Par ailleurs, je vous invite à suivre nos travaux qui auront lieu le 1er novembre au Conseil des commissaires spécial du 1er novembre, auquel, bien sûr, c'est une séance publique à laquelle vous êtes bienvenue. Merci.
Questions remain unanswered, and FACE School is changing. Due to Primiano's suspension, the school's vice principal, Christine Besson, became interim principal. Immediately, the school board brought in a certain Mr. Gord as interim vice principal. Parents have not been notified of this change. They do not know who Mr. Gord is. They just hear their children talk about him. Parents and students at FACE are now impatiently waiting for the special meeting of the commissars of the CSDM to be held on November 1st. But what they really want is the return of their cherished principal, Nick Primiano.
Death in Oaxaca by Brad Will. Early dawn, October 16th. Yesterday, I went for a walk with the good people of Oaxaca. Was walking all day, really. In the afternoon, they showed me where the bullets hit the wall. They numbered the ones they could reach. It reminded me of the doorway of Amadou Diallo's home. But here, the graffiti was there before the shooting began. One bullet they didn't number was still in his head. He was 41 years old, Alejandro Garcia Hernandez, at the neighborhood barricade every night. That night, he came out to join his wife and sons to let an ambulance through. Then a pickup tried to follow. He took their bullet when he told them they could not pass. They never did. These military men in civilian dress shot their way out of there. A young man who wanted to only be called Marco was with them when the shooting happened. A bullet passed through his shoulder. He was clearly in shock when we met. 19 years old. Said he hadn't told his parents yet. Said he had been at the barricade every night. Said he was going back as soon as the wound closed. Absolutely. Just days before, there was a delegation of senators visiting to determine the ungovernability of the state. They got a taste. The call went out to shut down the rest of the government. Dozens went walking out of the Zocalo City Center with big sticks and a box full of spray paint. They took control of 3 city buses and went around the city all morning, visiting local government buildings and informing them that they were closed. And we appreciate your voluntary cooperation. And they followed out, perturbed but still getting paid. Shut. As they pulled away from the last stop, 3 gunmen came out and started shooting. 2 buses had already pulled away. Mayhem. 10-minute battle with stones and slingshots and screaming. 1 head wound. Another through the leg.